the refugees and treating them as a bad that needs to be thrown off one's backyard and onto somebody else's backyard. And the result is a complete loss of Europe's integrity and soul.
Well, Yanis, very quickly before we conclude, you've talked about the rise of right-wing parties and in Greece, Golden Dawn in particular, as becoming worse as the economic crisis worsened. So could you talk about the impact of Golden Dawn and its recent expanding power?
It's not just Golden Dawn. It's everywhere in Europe. We have a neo-fascist government in Hungary. We have Marie Le Pen, who is going to top the presidential race next year in France. I mean, you just have to state this to panic. You have UKIP, the United Kingdom Independence Party in Britain. You've got Austria in Vienna, the beautiful city of Vienna. 42% voted for a neo-fascist party in the last municipal election and last week. In the
we have 30 seconds, so quick, please.
It's very simple. Great Depression, national humiliation, put them together, like in the 1920s and 30s in Germany, and you end up with the serpent's egg hatching.
Yanis Varoufakis, before we end, I do have to ask you a question about that song we played, Pulp, Common People. Was it about your wife? Can we settle this once and for all?
You may very well say this. I couldn't possibly comment.
Say that again.
You may very well say this, but I couldn't possibly comment.
Well, I thank you so much for being with us. Yanis Varoufakis, former finance minister of Greece, now professor of economic theory at the University of Athens. His new book, And the Weak Suffer What They Must, Europe's Crisis and America's Economic Future. And that does it for our show. We have job openings at Democracy Now!, internships as well as fellowships. So go to democracynow.org. Later today at noon, I'll be at Changing Hands on the 20th anniversary of Democracy Now! In Phoenix, in Tempe, and then on to Tucson, then to Grass Valley. San Mateo will be in.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today's guest is local journalist Sheila Hamilton, author of the new book, All the Things We Never Knew, Chasing the Chaos of Mental Illness.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was donated by Eclectic Kitchen at 4936 Northeast Fremont Street, serving comfort food 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday to Sunday. Lunch was provided by Taqueria Los Gorditos at 1212 Southeast Division, offering meat, vegan, and vegetarian breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Dinner was provided by Yen Ha, a Vietnamese restaurant and lounge at 6820 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, 7 days a week.
KBOO Community Radio, along with Street Roots Newspaper, is proud to co-sponsor Amy Goodman's Portland appearance Sunday, May 8th, at the Aladdin Theater. She'll be talking about Democracy Now!, 20 years covering the movements changing America. Her new book, co-authored by David Goodman and Dennis Moynihan. And Amy will be doing a book signing after the talk. All proceeds go to benefit KBOO and Street Roots Newspaper. Again, that's Amy Goodman on Sunday, May 8th at the Aladdin Theater, 3017 Southeast Milwaukee Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/democracynowbenefit. Democracy is coming to the
USA.
Get up, stand up. Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. I am thrilled with our program today. As you know, we are smack dab in the middle of our membership drive, and we will be coming to you later to ask you to call 877-500-4200. 5266 and become a member today. And you're going to want to become a member today because we have a very, very special thank you gift for you today. It is called, we have a book called All the Things We Never Knew. Sheila Hamilton is the author of this book and is chasing the chaos of mental illness. Sheila Hamilton is a 5-time Emmy Award-winning journalist and the author of All the Things We Never Knew. Sheila's storytelling resumes a resume runs through film, commercial television, radio, and print. She began her career as an associate producer for public broadcasting and then anchored and reported commercial television news for KTVX in Salt Lake City, Utah, and KATU in Portland, Oregon. Sheila currently hosts the Kink Morning Show in Portland, Oregon, where she was recently voted Oregon's Best Radio Personality. I think I'll arm wrestle her a bit.
As you should.
She also writes cover stories for About Face magazine and authors the blog SheilaHamilton.com. Sheila is a frequent speaker and MC for her favorite causes, Mindful Mental Health and Empowerment for Girls. She serves on the board of Girls Inc., an organization empowering girls to be strong, smart, and bold, in the Flawless Foundation, a mental health advocacy organization. Welcome to the program,
Hello,
Sheila.
Hello, Joanne. It is so good to see you again.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. And I want to also introduce the fabulously wonderful Wendy Sample, who is a volunteer with NAMI, the National Association for the Mentally Ill. And she's here to tell us about the NAMI Walk that is coming up very soon. In fact, on Sunday, May 15th. And welcome, Wendy, to the program.
Thank you for having me.
It's so good to see you, Wendy.
Thank you.
This is, I want to say first that I finished this book 24 hours ago, and I was absolutely blown away both by your candor, by the emotion, and by the real story that I think anyone who reads this book can relate to.
Oh, thank you, Joanne.
And so I just want to thank you so much for that. And I wrote about 10,000 questions that I wanted to ask you.
Let's
that
go.
I know we won't get through for the program. Let me start first with Wendy, though, because I want to make sure that we give the information as often as necessary so that people know about the upcoming walk. So I'll start with you, Wendy. How are you this morning?
I'm fabulous. No traffic for me to get here. That's a good thing.
So life is good.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, Wendy, you've been involved with NAMI for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. I started in the family-to-family class, which meets 3 hours a week for 10 weeks. I was with 28 people suffering severely from a mental health episode with a family member. And we cried and learned and had a fabulous time because we had Pam Dunham as our teacher, who has been on the program with us before. And it just really alarmed me that there's so many people out there suffering and they don't know where to go. And NAMI offers, even just the website alone, such incredible information. And so I got involved with the walk because I'm fun. I really like
Of course you are.
I like parties. The walk is just a great time. Dave Dahl from Dave's Killer Bread, which of course he sold.
Yes.
But
yes.
That's okay. He's a very big supporter and he will be with us.
Again.
Yes, again. And we have very good support citywide. But of course, mental health is not a sexy cause. And so we get about 4,000 people out for a walk. We're beautiful. We just have a great time. It's a wonderful community. But we need everybody to know they're welcome. We need everybody to know, come, enjoy it. It's all free, of course, just like NAMI. All the programs are free. It's just to get the information out. So come on out on Sunday at noon. We have booths and interactive activities and music and wonderful
and
support.
Do people need to sign up in advance or can they sign up that day?
They can sign up that day.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I will come back to you because something that you just said, which is that we need more people to be involved. Sheila and I were talking before the program started, and we realized that this is the last taboo. right? Mental illness is the one last taboo that we haven't been able to make that leap from. It's shameful. It's something that we don't talk to our family or other people about. We don't seek support for. And your book is going to do so much to change that.
Thank you, Joanne. I really believe that mental illness is where breast cancer was 20 years ago. Oh. It was where the gay rights movement was just 10 years ago.
Right.
We can really learn something from other civil rights movements that have taken the narrative back.
Yes.
And that's really what I wanted to do in writing this book about my own family's experience with mental illness, was to form a narrative around how do we be open and really candid about these experiences in our families so that others can begin to come out of the shadows of their suffering as well.
Yes, and the challenges of coming out of that. So let me start with, tell me about your early days with David.
My husband, I first met him in a coffee shop when I was a reporter for K2, and it was as if the electricity around him was supercharged by his charisma. Mm. He was so beautiful physically, spiritually, emotionally. He had an intellect that I'd never known before. Mm-hmm. This guy didn't have a television, but he would tear through 3 books a week, and he had perfect memory for facts, figures, historical data. It was the kind of mind that I was so in love with immediately.
Mm.
And it was only in the early years of our marriage that I began to see strange behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because I know so many people who are all along a spectrum of mental health,
right.
I don't judge, right?
Right.
So
right.
I didn't judge some of his very prickly behaviors in the beginning, how sensitive he was to light and sound and how his mood might change throughout the day.
Mm-hmm.
But as our marriage began to get more complicated, and especially after our first daughter was born, I began to see some really troubling things, Joanne, that I began to deny.
Mm-hmm.
And especially infidelity. Infidelity is a hallmark of bipolar disorder.
Mm.
And instead of seeing my husband's infidelity as a real warning sign that something could be wrong with him,
right.
I thought he was just being a jerk,
mm-hmm.
a selfish person mm-hmm. who wanted to continue to have a stable marriage and be able to have his fun.
Right.
These kinds of things in families are really common, where we see behaviors that we just don't want to admit
right.
are actually the early signs of mental illness.
Right.
Excuse me, allergies.
It's okay. It's okay. And so when you start seeing these signs, you, as we talked earlier, I think that there's also this thing that, you know, you get married, part of the marriage vows is better or worse, right?
Yeah.
And if you really, really take that to heart, mm-hmm. you think, well, I'm just married to a jerk, right? I just have to figure out how I'm going to live with a jerk, right? but then you realize that something else was going on.
Yeah, it was, you know, my position that I took in my marriage was that my husband was always so beautiful with my daughter,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like that was enough. Mm-hmm. I wanted her to grow up with the love of mm-hmm. the man who was her biological father,
mm-hmm.
and I enjoyed our marriage even as distant as we became. But as David's illness worsened, and he refused to actually call it an illness because he was self-stigmatizing,
mm-hmm.
as his illness worsened, his behaviors began to be very, very out of the norm. His moods would cycle with him being very depressed and very elated, maybe 4 times a day.
Mm.
And then his father died and he stopped sleeping.
Mm.
If there's someone in your life who isn't sleeping, it is one of the most glaring signs that they could be suffering from a mental illness. I didn't know the signs and symptoms to watch for.
Right.
I'd never had anybody or in any class talk to me about mental illness, and yet look how much we learn about our own physical health.
That's right.
He then began to suffer from really explosive rages.
Mm.
And when he started raging in front of my daughter, that's when I made plans to actually separate.
Mm-hmm.
And it was at that point he asked a family friend for something to help him sleep through the night.
Mm-hmm.
His friend diagnosed him as being depressed and gave him antidepressants. And within 48 hours of taking antidepressants, he told me that he had his first voices in his head telling him to jump from the Vista Bridge.
Wow.
Now, antidepressants are really helpful for a lot of people, but they are very dangerous for people with bipolar disorder. A recent study by the National Institute of Mental Health said as many as 50% of people in a study group who were presenting as depressed, who were actually bipolar, went into their first manic episode. And many of those people never recover. And that's what happened to my husband.
Wow. And so if you're just joining us, I'm talking to Sheila Hamilton, the author of All the Things We Never Knew, Chasing the Chaos of Mental Illness. And I'm also talking to Wendy Sample, who is a longtime volunteer with NAMI, the National Association for the Mentally Ill. And they have a march coming up on Sunday, March 15th. We'll be at Vera Katz.
May 15th.
Oh, May 15th. Yeah. What did I say, March?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're marching May 15th.
We're marching May 15th. Yes, we are. And registration is at noon. It is a 5K walk. Thousands of people will be there, and it's a great opportunity to stand up and support people having resources and access to good mental health treatment. We will be going to talk to the fabulous Mike Kreshaw in just a couple of minutes about our membership drive. We are, in fact, we have the best thank you gift I could imagine, because, you know, I was actually in tears at part of this book. Mm. Couldn't wait to get to the end of it. And for me, I mean, probably like you, I start a lot of books, but I don't actually get to finish a lot of
right,
them.
Yeah.
But I was determined I was going to finish this one. And I just love the fact that there's so much of your heart and soul in this book.
Thank you, Joanne. And it
really, really, really will make a difference for people, because, you know, not everybody is that forthcoming about having these experiences. And this is going to help so many people. And I think it's like for a minimum pledge of $75. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yep.
He's right there.
I love it.
I'm like, right here, $75, that's the minimum pledge.
That is the minimum pledge to get All the Things We Never Knew. It's a great opportunity to support KBOO. It's a great opportunity to really learn a personal story of a family's journey through mental illness, and how they were able to be resilient and prepare for the next generation.
You know, Joanne, one of the things I did, because I'm trained as an investigative reporter, is I wrote the memoir part of this, and then I really wanted to give people resources if they're in crisis.
Yes.
And so sandwiched between each chapter are the, you know, organizations that are doing great things, are the numbers you need to call. If you have a family member who might be suffering, what you can do to actually get support, the signs and symptoms you need to be looking for in different mental illnesses. So it really is /memoir/guide.
Yes. And I did like how that went back and forwards that way, because it really was. It was like, here's the personal up close, and here's the, if you need help now.
Right. Yeah.
And the numbers, 1 in 4 will deal with a mental health issue in their lifetime. So we're talking more than breast cancer, more than heart disease.
And so I bet what we want people to do right now is to call 1-877-500-5266, and you can become a member of KBOO. And for a minimum pledge of like $750 a month, you could have this book. And it would be painless, because it could come right out of your checking account, right out of your banking account. And again, if you call up now, 877-500-5266, you can take this book home. And as an extra bonus, Sheila has agreed to sign them all today.
I love it. Yeah.
And so It's not going to get any better than this, folks.
What's really exciting is last week I learned that this book just won the Gold Award for the Indie Publishers Award, the highest honor that you can get in indie publishing. And it's been really helpful to me to know that it's now in 385 libraries across the country.
Fabulous. And waiting lists. There's waiting lists.
I really want people to be able to access the information that they need and have a story that might help them not feel so alone.
Yes.
And so I've been just thrilled that it's being sought out by a lot of librarians across the country.
Well, not to mention your publisher had to reprint.
Okay.
Yeah. What a hard problem to have. Again, the number is 877-500-5266. You can take this book home. You can have a signed copy. But more importantly, if you have family members who are struggling with mental health issues, what a wonderful gift to be able to put in their hands that will help them have some resources and understand that this covers every single community, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of age, regardless of income. This impacts everyone's life. And so your opportunity to not only support KBOO, support people having good mental health services in our community, support people who are supporting family members who are in mental health crises. Now's the time. Go to your phone, 877-500-5266. I bet Mike's a little annoyed at me because he was like supposed to be doing that, right? And I just jumped in.
No, this is a collective thing, you know. And so by you doing that, it's giving me a chance to enjoy my coffee, you know. And I'm happy you're doing it. And well, you know, I did a little math, Joanne.
Okay.
And it looks like this book is going to be available for a minimum pledge of $75, which actually comes to $6.25 a month.
Mm. Oh, see, yeah, you're better at math than me. See,
I have a cheat sheet. I do. Just like I have a cheat sheet in front of me that says 877-500-5266. That's the number that you guys need to call to become a member.
Yes. And if you do that now, you will have a great day because you will know that you are supporting the NAMI Walk that's coming up on Sunday, May 15th. You know that you are supporting getting information, good factual information to people who may need to find some resources around mental illness. And of course, it's a big issue here in this community, especially we know we've been doing a lot of work around the police and how they interact with people with mental health issues.
Yeah, there was just a great article in the New York Times about our police bureau is probably going to be a model for the nation now and how they're attempting to de-escalate these interchanges with people with mental illness. And, you know, I still don't think that it goes far enough because the way that we're treating the mentally ill right now is by putting them in jail.
Yes.
We haven't funded the system that we promised when we deinstitutionalized people from our state hospitals.
That's
and
right.
I really think it needs to be a community-wide discussion, not just about the homeless people, not just about the suicide rate, but about how are we treating one another and what have we become as human beings if we let our most vulnerable fall into jails for their treatment.
That's absolutely true. Again, the number is 877-500-5266. I'm going to let Mike go back to his coffee. I know that other folks are going to keep calling 877-500-5266.
Can I just thank a couple of people?
You most certainly can.
I want to say thanks to Paul of Stevenson. That's a new member. And thanks to Susan of Ontario, Oregon. So thank you guys.
All right. And one of the things we know about KBOO is people listen far and wide. People from other countries listen because they download the app at kboo.fm and they can take KBOO anywhere in the world with them. We're just that kind of station.
That's great.
We're voices from the edge, you know.
Yes, we
That's
are.
Right.
Again, 877-500-5266. And I will come back and check in with Mike a bit later because I know people want to hear more about this book. And I definitely have a lot more questions for Sheila about the book. And so one of the things I wanted to ask you, and I know that this is something that many people think about. Can you talk about the push and pull between your commitment to your marriage and then knowing that you had a need to protect Sophie?
Yeah. You know, looking back on the person that I was during that marriage, I was so organized around her health and her well-being that I felt as if in some ways I minimized my own well-being. Mm-hmm. I didn't demand the love or the affection that I needed from my husband because I was so centered around her growing up happy and healthy. Mm-hmm. And it was only toward the very end of our marriage when I began to be concerned that he might actually be a danger to her. Mm-hmm. Even when David was at his highest, most rapid cycling of bipolar disorder, mm-hmm. when he seriously would fall to his knees and be crying and then stand up and be laughing, it was that frightening. Mm-hmm. If Sophie walked into the room, he somehow managed to hold it together for her.
Wow.
And he was so committed to her well-being that I think he managed to find his best self even as the illness was really progressing. When David was hospitalized, he was hospitalized at a time when psychiatric care was really at a low point. Mm-hmm. It was very much about the number of people you brought through the doors. It wasn't about the treatment. Mm-hmm. The nurses sat behind bulletproof glass. The doctors saw him only for med checks. Mm-hmm. They had no interest really in helping him see a path to recovery.
Right.
And the one thing that could kind of cheer him, bring any light at all to him, was Sophie sitting on his knee. Mm-hmm. So I kept hoping that her love, mm-hmm. that my continued support mm-hmm. might be enough to save him, mm-hmm. but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I really believe that one of the things we've got to change about our mental health system is that we have to say, this is a dark hour for you,
yes.
but we're going to walk through this time with you.
Yes.
And we believe that you can recover.
Right.
For too long, the message has been, you'll have this disorder for the rest of your life.
Right.
It's going to get worse.
Right.
And the fact is, that's simply not true.
Right. And that seemed to be what David took to heart, was that he was never, ever, ever going to be in control again of himself.
Right.
Right? That he was going to be medicated. He was just not going to be in control.
Right. And, you know, I don't think that the medical profession, especially the doctors that were assigned to him, gave him much hope. They told him, you'll need to give up your business. He ran a very successful building and design business. Mm-hmm. They told him that you'd likely never work again. And they questioned whether or not he would be a fit parent to our daughter.
Wow.
I think that was the end. In fact, he told me that he felt like from the advice his doctors gave him, his only hope was as a homeless person under the Burnside Bridge.
Oh.
That's not the kind of messaging we need to give people in crisis.
No.
In fact, that kind of psychiatric care re-traumatizes people in crisis, and we have got to stop doing that.
Right. And did you know anything about bipolar disorder before?
Never even heard of bipolar disorder. This was 9 years ago. I'd never even heard the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more common today, mm-hmm. but if you don't know about it, it's when people are suffering from the extremes of very low depressions. Mm-hmm. And almost, David had bipolar disorder too, so he was in a state of hypomania, meaning mm-hmm. he was really incredible energy, but somewhat irritable energy.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't sleep well. He had difficulty organizing things. He lost track of things. He, you know, when I met him, was one of the most organized minds I've ever known.
Mm-hmm.
And to watch him lose that capability was really heartbreaking.
Wow. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Sheila Hamilton. She's the author of the, not a new book anymore. When did it come out?
October 20th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's still fairly new.
Yeah.
And in the second print and winning awards already. All the Things We Never Knew, Chasing the Chaos of Mental Illness. One of the things that I found interesting in your book was David's family's response to his illness. Mm-hmm. There seemed to be a not only a generational denial, but just like a, we're just not going to go there. He's not ill.
That's right.
He just
mental illness was seen as a moral failing in his family. It was seen as a weakness of self.
Mm-hmm.
And his doctors believe he probably had his first depression when he was sent away to a private boarding school in England. and he was severely bullied there. Mm-hmm. He didn't have really anyone to talk to about what was happening in his life, and he reported those depressions all through his teen years.
Right.
But he couldn't talk to his parents about it.
Right.
It wasn't really, psychiatry was seen as just buffoonery.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as he grew older and began to have these feelings of otherness and the inability to actually self-soothe or calm himself, he very much felt like he was alone
mm-hmm.
in all of it. And David began to self-stigmatize in a way that was probably more dangerous than the societal stigma we right. have around mental illness. He believed himself to be unworthy of mm-hmm. love, mm-hmm. unworthy of the kind of commitment and relationship that a lot of people hope for in their marriages.
Right.
And so he began to act out in ways that were really, really disastrous for all of us.
Wow. And so, Wendy, I bet some of these stories sound pretty familiar with you as you've been interacting with your sister over the years.
Yes. Yeah. And Karen, my 62-year-old sister, is diagnosed as schizophrenic. She has lived independently, but, you know, just no sense of time and place in correlation with reality. Mm. Just found out she was 4 months behind in her rent. Really, the HIPAA laws, of course, I can't get that information directly from the landlord unless I take full responsibility for paying her rent onward and forward, which is not an option. So fortunately, I have a, you know, somewhat help with a social service agency and an individual that has, you know, gained her trust. So I think for families, it's devastating because, as you talked about that generational denial, it was the same thing in my family. My mother died when she was 48, very young, and she understood, but my father denied my sister's illness and basically wanted to just, you know, shut the door and ignore it. Mm-hmm. So it's a very hard path. And I think that's where, you know, we really can get out, Sheila, and tell people that, let's talk about it.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, when I was going through this, I went to PALS to try to find a book for caregivers.
Right.
Because the bulk of the care falls on family members.
That's right.
And there's a lot of books written by psychiatrists, by psychologists, by therapists, by people with mental illness, but there are very few designed for the caregiver.
Yes.
I wanted this book to be a resource for the people who take 95% of the care.
Right.
The emotional strain, the isolation and fear that you go through in not knowing what is the best course of action to take for your loved one.
Right.
In so many other illnesses, we have the medical profession telling us exactly what to do.
That's
with
right.
with cancers, with
right.
heart disease, with kidney disease. We know what the course of treatment looks like.
That's right.
With mental illness, it is not a one-size-fits-all. Right. And so you're in a very, very confused and lonely place mm. when you find out that your loved one has actually been diagnosed with a mental illness.
Right.
And as Wendy talked about, HIPAA has not been helpful to the family members. There was a time, of course, when the rights weren't there enough for the individual.
Right.
And we brought in these very strong HIPAA laws to protect them.
Right.
But what that has done, it's isolated family members from the information.
Yes.
I couldn't get any information about my husband's diagnosis.
Right.
I didn't know how sick he really was.
Right.
The caregivers, I mean, the people at the hospital looked at me as if I wasn't on his team.
Right. Right.
They looked at me as if I was other.
Right.
And so they organize around the patient. Well, it's us who have to take care of those people.
Right.
We really should be looking at this as a community-wide effort and take every warm body that says, hey, I have my hand up willing to help.
Absolutely true. Oh, my gosh. We could do this all day long. I think we should go to the phone line. Good morning, Sunny. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. What a good show.
Thank
I have
you.
To say before I forget, I saw your cute face on the TV.
Oh, thank you. Okay,
just,
got
just,
that over with.
Joanne, she's so cute. And I really paid attention, too.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I'm sure that person will appreciate that you paid attention. But, of course, we're on KBOO, so we don't mention names,
no,
right?
No names. No. Thank you for such an important show. And these ladies are so well-spoken. I mean,
I think I can really, really hear what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say real quickly, what I think they're talking about right here is the immense, you know, challenge for the family and for the person who's experiencing this.
Yes.
And, you know, nothing can be taken care of environmentally, politically, all the work that we have to do to create a sustainable world. Nothing can be taken care of without nurturance, and we have to go back to the nurturance base. And these families feel so alone within this because there is too much aloneness in this culture. And I do think we are beginning to face more bravely our need for greater, closer bonding, real foundation community. And I just think that these women's efforts are so important in helping us get to what we have to do and helping us do it. So thank you so much for such a good show. I'll hang up.
Thank you, Sunny. Appreciate the call.
Sunny,
have a great day.
Sunny makes such a good point about isolation. I just returned from a Chicago conference for the American Association of Suicidology, and our suicide rate now is at the highest it's been in 3 decades.
Wow.
Oregon is the 8th highest suicide rate in the nation. And if you look at the factors as to why we're seeing this increase in suicide rate, so much of it is an increase in isolation.
Yes.
We're seeing a huge increase in the divorce rate after 50. We're seeing so much of our families being broken apart to be able to have to take jobs across the country because of the economic conditions that we have. And if we look back at the factors of why we were knitted together in a way, maybe in the 1950s, even the 1960s, when we were having a better effort on impacting the suicide rate, it's because there was more a sense of community.
Yes, yes.
We're now looking at this crisis, and I think it should be called a public health crisis, as something that we could impact by having community-wide discussions around this. And yet, if you bring up the topic of suicide, people turn away.
Right.
You want to talk about the most stigmatized topic ever? Suicide.
Suicide.
And all that is the end product of mental illness not being treated well.
Yes.
And I can speak to the suicide issue because I've obviously been around numerous people and it just emotionally overtook me. So I had to tell people, please, I can't go there right now because it's too close.
Right.
But I joined a class called Stand Up for Mental Health. That's also through NAMI, who offers all these wonderful resources. And I can tell you it's taken me a year and a half, but I think what helps is for me to understand where those people are at and why that chemically comes into their brain and they're dealing with that. It's just a fact of their daily existence at some point.
Right.
And we as family community need to understand it's not for effect. It's not out of anything else, and that's really something they have to struggle with every day.
Yeah.
And so I'm much more empathetic, and I feel that because I've been immersed in this, you know, community with people like us, it's just, it opens my heart.
Wow.
It's also really important, I just think, for the media to focus on what can be done.
Yes.
And how many people, for every one death by suicide, we have 278 people who are getting the help they need, combating their suicidal ideation, getting community help, doing the kind of therapies that are really helpful, like dialectical behavioral therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy, making a life that's good despite the illness.
That's right.
And I really want to keep the focus on that. There's hope. There's the possibility of recovery. There's so much optimism around the world of mental health. We really need to start putting that in there.
You are absolutely right. And, you know, I'm going to leave you guys hanging about how this book ends, because if I tell you, then that would mean that you wouldn't need the book. So I am not going to go there. But what I am going to do is go and join Mike again so that we can see who we have to thank, so that we can encourage people to call us at 877-500-5266. Get your own personal copy of all the things we never knew. Chasing the Chaos of Mental Illness by Sheila Hamilton. Get your own copy. It will be autographed. And it's only for a mere $6.50 a month.
$6.25 a month comes down comes to $75 a year.
You see, you see me, I keep trying to edge it up every time.
Well, hey,
just,
you're a good fundraiser.
You know, that's it. You get this book, you get this wonderful book, All the Things We Never Knew, for a minimum pledge of $75 a month.
That's
but
right.
Hey, if you want to go above the minimum pledge, we're not going to stop you. We're actually going to encourage you, because for $8.25 a month, which comes to $100 a year, you know, you can get the book and you can continue to further help KBOO get towards our goal and further help you reach your goal for this show, you know, which is, what do we have, a $1,000 goal?
Is that what we got to do?
Yeah,
that's what
come
we're
on.
Doing.
Let's support Joanne.
Oh, man.
We, Yahoo.
I mean, that's like a logo, isn't it?
How many years have you been giving back? Let's give back to Joanne.
Right? Yeah, there we go. There we go. I didn't have to say it myself. I got guests to say that. But the number to call. Now, you got to call before the show's over. Otherwise, you're going to make me look bad, okay? 877-500-5266. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge for quite some time now, and now it's time for you to join the party, right? Become a member, keep your community radio station. I mean, we don't have too many community radio stations in the country, right?
Right.
And this one's been around for 48 years, and only because of people like you who went to their phone and said, I'm going to invest in community radio, and I'm going to do it right now. The number to call, 877-500-5266. We've got volunteers standing by to take your phone call, or you could go online at kboo.fm and become a member that way.
And I don't want to interrupt, but I do want to say thank you to Marilyn, who renewed.
All right,
from
Marilyn.
Southeast Portland, and Holly, who renewed from North Portland.
I want to find out, where are those people that are in Medford? Where are those people in Vancouver, in Ridgefield, Washington? I know you folks are out there listening, because you tell me all the time, I heard you. And so I appreciate the Portlanders who call in and become a member and renew. But I know you folks on the outskirts out there, you're listening. So come on, it's your turn. 877-500-5266. Mike says we've got $1,000 to raise. That's about a four of you call. We could do that. We could do that very quickly, just like that. And as an added bonus, if you come to the studio in the next 20 minutes, you could even get a picture taken with Sheila Hamilton.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it would be, and then you'd have the book, you'd have a picture, you'd have bragging rights with your friends. I mean, this is a good Thursday morning. What else could you ask for?
You can meet my dog, Milo.
Yes, yes. Milo's here in the studio. Yeah, Milo
guys,
came.
I want to encourage people to come down to 20 Southeast 8th off of 8th and Burnside. Do that. Get a signed copy of the book, you know.
That's right.
Meet Sheila. Say hello to Joanne. Say hello to the volunteers who are going to help you become a member. But if you can't do that, 877-500-5266.
That's absolutely right. See, Mike is so mellow. I want to be Mike when I grow up, right? Because he's got that nice mellow voice.
Yeah,
and I'm
sexy.
I'm always like this, right? Okay, people, come on. We got to go. 877-500-5266.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Please make that call now. And let me tell you what's coming up on NABOO today. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, The News You're Not Supposed to Know. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, Headlines, Interviews, and Commentary. At 10:15 is Flashpoints, Investigative News Radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Radio Zine, we hear about the new book, Weed, The User's Guide, a 21st Century Handbook for Enjoying Marijuana. Boy, do we have a lot of those coming up. And at 11:30, the film show features legendary documentary filmmaker Frederick Wiseman. So that's what's coming up today on The Boo. And again, if you haven't 877-500-5266 is the number to call to become a member or to renew your membership. And we've got the books here, and Sheila Hamilton has graciously agreed to sign them for us. Again, we want to let you know that NAMI Walk is coming up on Sunday, May 15th, starting at 12 noon is registration. For more information, you can go to the NAMIWalks.org/Northwest website, www.NAMIWalks.org/Northwest.
And you know, dogs are welcome at the walk, so Milo can walk with
that's
us.
That's awesome.
Yes. All right, all right. And so all are welcome. We have a caller on the line. Good morning, Malia. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, thank you for having this show on today.
You are welcome.
I wanted to give a little bit of feedback from my perspective. These type of shows are so important. I actually had a degree in psychology in mental health and worked at many locations around town with multiple personality disorders. I worked at Pacific Gateway Hospital that takes in all sorts of people with mental health problems. And it wasn't until my son, who was almost graduated from OSU, lived over in Bend, just fell through the floor and with mental illness. I never saw it coming. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it. I just never saw it coming. And I can honestly say that it was that incident that made me, as a psychologist, realize I didn't have a clue of what these people's lives were like.
Oh, wow.
I had not only had to deal with that, but I had to deal with this terrible internal feeling that I had misserved so many people. And then when they left, there was always a look in their eye, and it was a look of distance and almost like you don't understand. And and it wasn't until my son got sick that I understood what all those looks were about, and I just felt terrible. And I realized that the training that you go through really does not allow people to understand what goes on. And my son was medicated with Paxil, and that's what caused him to have a continuum of wanting to take his own life. He literally was in bed for 6 years with no medication that would help, not a single medication. Mm. And as grateful as I am for the Oregon Health Plan, I can say that its biggest deficit is that it offers the poorest quality of help for people with mental illness, the most vulnerable population. The best that we could do were people who had maybe 6 hours of training in mental illness or mental health in their whole curriculum. I started researching all these people that, you know, he could go to, most of whom were just nurse practitioners. There are no psychologists, really, that have the expertise that I ever ran into when we were searching for help. In the end, he was so lucky to have a psychologist on his way to New York who was a guest at the hospital over in Bend where my son was getting treated, who looked at his thing and said, "Why do they have you on this stuff?" And he took him off the medications and put him on two things, and my son is now functioning and back into society, but not without tremendous scars and the realization that I know that the likeliness of him falling back into it are very, very great. And, you know, just trying to prepare myself. But I will say that coming from a counselor who really thought that I was good and helping people, I was stunned when you actually live with a person who's struggling and you experience their day-to-day life, that I just felt like I never learned a thing. And that's when I turned to NAMI. And even though I wasn't able to go to the meetings because we fell into medical debt in my efforts to try and get him well. We had people selling us bottles of live neurotransmitters for $1,000 a bottle, and somebody on my type of income. I mean, you're so vulnerable that you'll do anything to save your loved one, even if it means giving up your lifelong savings and everything. And that's exactly what happened to us. And I'm in medical debt because of trying to get him well.
Your path just sounds so familiar. And I talk with dozens of families every week at my blog at SheilaHamilton.com. I'm constantly hearing these kinds of stories. And the one very common thread is that upon diagnosis, oftentimes people are given a medication and they might be misprescribed.
Yes.
When that medication doesn't work, instead of saying, uh-oh, that medication might not have been the right one, they double it.
Yes.
And then they layer another medication on top of that.
Yes.
By the time my husband got out of psychiatric care, he was on 13 different medications. And you know, for the past 10 years, we've been fed the idea that this psychopharmaceutical approach is going to be the be-all, end-all to mental illness.
Right.
But we have to admit at this point that we've got to take an integrated approach to our care.
Yes.
We need to be.
That is so true. It really is. And I'll just inject this, that I had called the very, within 2 days of him being on Paxil, he told me that whether his eyes were closed or open, he just saw blood coming down the wall. And I look at the thing and it says, if you're, you know, you have visions of suicide, call your doctor.
Right.
When I called the doctor, the response to me was, he's such a nice guy, and he is. He's like a teddy bear. His personality is just very, very sweet. And they said, we cannot imagine what you're saying to be true.
Well,
and they hung up on me.
No, they have just last year settled the biggest class action lawsuit of parents who lost their teenagers while they were on those SSRIs. The data was clear. They knew there was a risk for suicide. They covered it up. And so many families lost their teenagers because of their reaction. The reaction that many young people have to these SSRIs is very similar to the reaction people with bipolar disorder have.
Mm.
They are effective drugs for a certain class of people with depression.
Right.
They are highly ineffective for others. So be very, very careful.
Every school shooting that I have researched, the person who did it was on these drugs.
Wow.
What? Everyone, you can go and you can look at all the young men who went into schools with guns.
Right.
And my son was talking about suicide. He had literally, he's a very smart person. And most people with mental illness have a sense of intelligence that just doesn't go into our black and white, you know,
system
thinking, so to speak.
Thank you so much for your call.
Okay.
I am going to have to move on, but I hope that this is the beginning of a community conversation about mental health and not just the only conversation that we have this year.
Well, thank you for initiating it because it well needs it.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
You so much. And so we're going to go back to Mike and find out who we should thank. And we're going to remind our listeners that here's your opportunity for a mere $6.25. $0.25 for a minimum pledge of $75. You can get Sheila Hamilton's book, All Things We Never Knew. And you can get it by making a small monthly donation. Or you could even come down to the studio and pick up your own autographed copy and maybe get a picture in the process. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And Mike, how
I
want to
say, hey, we're doing really good. This is really good radio, by the way.
Thank you.
I want to thank both of you, and I want to thank the callers, and I want to thank Catherine and Wes Lynn,
all right,
who increased her monthly contribution.
Yay.
And I just want to ask a question, like, because I'm so inspired by what you all are talking about here. And if you are too, then you can give us a call at 877-500-5266 and become a member. But I'm starting to, like, feel like, for as crazy as society is and as not helpful as a lot of the institutions that are supposedly there to help people who are struggling, it almost seems like we should all be mentally ill.
Do you ever
feel that way?
Listen, I've often thought that if we truly recognized how much trauma we're all in from day to day, what we witness as human beings, how fast the rate of our society goes, that we should all be having these kind of reactions.
That's right.
We know now that trauma is at the root of most mental illness and that we're all along the continuum.
Spectrum.
From being well to very ill.
That's right.
And if you're in the middle of a divorce and you're not sleeping and you're not eating well and you don't have community support to be able to talk to your friends about what you're going through, you're pushing yourself over into that boundary where you could suffer from anxiety or depression.
That's right.
We've got to acknowledge
we
are, our mental illness, I mean, our mental health is our overall health.
That's
all it is. It's all related.
And we're all temporarily mentally stable.
Right.
Right?
Mm. Of course.
Because through our entire lives, we go through, as you say, the spectrum, right?
Yeah.
It's like if you feel mentally healthy today, that's a temporary state.
Right. Well, we all say normal is just a setting on your dryer.
Wow.
I like that.
Well, you know, there definitely have been times where I did not feel normal until I turned on the radio.
Yes.
Yay.
And I heard some real information that actually resonated with me.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, I'm not alone.
Right.
Yeah. You are not alone. You know, I want to remind people to become members of KBOO because it's only here that you're going to hear the type of things that kind of reinforce that sentiment of like, you know what? I'm not tripping. Actually, this is really going on for a lot of people. 877-500-5266.
That is correct. Or you could go online at kboo.fm and become a member that way. Or you could come down to the studio. We're going to be here for another, at least 8 minutes. and we're located at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And we'd love, love, love to see you. And we just want to thank you because you're right. This is the kind of programming we can bring because we have a community radio station that we own, right? The collective, we own this station. It's ours. We get to do the kind of programming that we know matters in people's lives.
And Joanne, you know, one thing that Mike said, it's just so prescient, and that is that if we could all acknowledge our spectrum, where we are on the spectrum, from day to day, and stop the fraud that we're all happy, that we're all doing fine, that our Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat is actually the reflection of who we are.
Right.
I think that if we could embrace that vulnerability to say, I'm not well.
Mm-hmm.
I actually need to take a day off because I'm feeling depressed.
Yes.
If we began being more honest about this from the people who are actually dealing with depression and doing very well,
that's right.
Perhaps they found the right medication, the right therapy, being open about how we're coping could be a life change. I think it could be as profound as the gay rights movement when people started just coming out.
Right.
You know, I had a woman on my show who is a 43-year-old executive, really well-known in the community. She finally, for the first time, said, I've been depressed since I was 15 years old. I want to say it to other people that you can live well with depression.
Wow.
It's huge. We need to be sharing that message again and again and again.
Absolutely. And so, Mike, we're going to give the number again, which is 877-500-5266. We're going to encourage people to go online at kboo.fm or come to the studio at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. And I just have a couple of more questions before the program is over. So thanks for your help, Mike.
Thank you so much. It was good to be here.
It's good to have you here. I don't think we've ever had this kind of interaction, but I'm feeling the love today. 877-500-5266. I want to go back to something you said earlier, Sheila, about the New York Times article and about Portland Police becoming the national model for how we engage with people with mental health issues. And I want to remind you that that particular article only talked to police, because had they talked to community members, we would have told them that since 2012, every person killed by Portland Police has been suffering a mental health breakdown. And we would have also said that six people were killed just in the last 12 months by Portland Police. All of them had mental health issues. And since 2012, there's normally the average of 2 to 4 per year.
Yeah.
And so while we are focused because we have a Department of Justice settlement agreement that forces us to focus on people with mental health issues or people perceived to have mental health issues, we have not come far enough yet to be a model for anyone, much less the nation.
Yeah. Well, it shows you just how bad the rest of the nation is if we're the model.
Yes,
right?
Yes, exactly right.
You know, it's a very interesting dynamic, because I don't think if I signed up to be a Portland police officer, I would say, and my life's dream is to help people with mental illness.
Right.
So why we are putting our police officers yes. in charge of a community response to yes. our most vulnerable people is madness.
Yes, yes.
Right?
I said the exact same thing. I thought, well, gee, how about we use mental health professionals?
Right.
Right? Rather, people train.
Right.
And as we heard from the previous caller, even people trained in mental health treatment aren't necessarily able to provide the resources that are necessary, right? As she shared a story about her son. So it made me crazy, right? But that's where we are. We're going to spend, you know, a couple of million dollars a year for the next 5 years. We're going to build it up inside the police department. Meanwhile, we still don't have mental health beds.
Right.
For the people who need them.
Yeah. You know, I think that there's got to be perhaps a different response than building big buildings with beds.
Yes.
I really do think we're going to have more neighborhood mobile response teams, people that are willing to do a kind of more entrepreneurial response to this, because the funding isn't there. We've lost $80 billion from mental health funding through mm-hmm. federal, state, and local since 2008.
Right.
And until we as families begin to demand equity and parity for our family members who are suffering from mental illness,
right.
This is what's going to happen.
Yes.
A police officer responds to your sick son, daughter, husband,
and NAMI
brother.
Does have training.
And yes.
For the police, and they do get out and do that. So thank them.
Yes, thank NAMI for that. And again, Sunday, May 15th, 2016, starting at 12 noon. Thank you so much, Sheila Hamilton. Thank you so much, Wendy Sample.
You got it.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for becoming a member. I will see you next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a fabulous day. Thank you, Steve, the most fabulous engineer on the planet. Take care.
And good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio station. It is Thursday morning, a minute before 9 o'clock. We're about an hour away from Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Then at 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 today on the radio zine, Doug McVeigh, speaks with David Schmader about his new book, Weed, The User's Guide, a 21st Century Handbook for Enjoying Marijuana. And at 11:30 on the film show, Jen Chavez interviews legendary documentary filmmaker Frederick Wiseman. That is all coming up on The Boo. Up next, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, up next.
KBOO would like to thank our community partners that donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was donated by Eclectic Kitchen at 4936 Northeast Fremont Street. Serving comfort food 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Tuesday to Sunday. Lunch was provided by Taqueria Los Gorditos at 1212 Southeast Division, offering meat, vegan, and vegetarian breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week. Dinner was provided by Yen Ha, a Vietnamese restaurant and lounge at 6820 Northeast Sandy Boulevard, 7 days a week.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids.